Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Alfred Adask, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. We're going to have a guest on. Roger Sales, of course, is calling in from Argentina. And Roger's, a friend of his, is Joel Boniak. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing the last name correctly, but we'll get that straightened out in a little while. But here's an article dealing with Mr. Boniak from November of last year. And the who published this was in the Huffington Post. Livingston, Montana. Montana judge walked out of a court hearing after being heckled by a rowdy crowd, leaving the conservative former state legislator, who instigated it all, to declare that he was in charge of the courtroom and proclaim the case against him dismissed. Former Republican Representative Joel Boniak appeared in Park County's Justice Court on Monday for what should have been a simple scheduling hearing before Justice of the Peace Linda Badesky and Deputy County Attorney Kathleen Carrick. Instead, Boniak walked into the end of the hearing, followed by supporters, and questioned the prosecutor's authority to hear the case. All right, Mr. Boniak will be our guest just a moment. So stay tuned, because this should be an interesting program. Mr. Boniak appears to be our kind of guy. You understand? He's willing to stand up and fight these people. But before we get to him, let's do the market report. Gold is off $8.10 to $1,379.90 per ounce. Silver is down 28 cents to $21.77 an ounce. Platinum is down $26 to $1,485. Palladium is off $18 to $755 an ounce. In the equities, Dow Jones is off 117 points to 15,121. NASDAQ is down 36 points to 3,438. New York Stock Exchange is down 85 points to 9,273. U.S. dollar down 0.58 to 81.11. And crude oil is off 51 cents to $95.26 per barrel. This is an, I'm looking at about 17 indicators, markets, metals. And it's an interesting day because usually you have a mix and some are red and some are green, meaning some are down and some are up. But on this particular day, everything is down. All right, dollars down, equities are down, metals are down. I'm not sure what that means necessarily. It's perhaps just a coincidence, and it may not have any significant meaning, but we'll talk. We'll watch and see what happens with the markets tomorrow, and we'll see if everything goes up or everything goes down. It'll probably be a mix again, but it's just kind of interesting. Everything down today. First, let's introduce our co-host, Roger S. Sales, our foreign correspondent calling in from Argentina. Well, Roger?
On a beautiful, spectacular day in Argentina, late fall, Al, and today it's close to 80 degrees, not a cloud in the sky. It's absolutely spectacular today. And it looks like the internet may even hold up today, so that would be a nice little plus for us.
Sounds good.
And I appreciate you having Joel on, and I think it might be instructive for the audience to know how our paths crossed. And this happened some years ago, Al, maybe 15, 16 years ago, okay, maybe even a little more. A coon dog friend of mine was at a expo there in your old town in Dallas-Fort Worth, and he saw this
guy who's Joe.
This is the background here now. So
wait a second now. I just want to understand. Is this the guy that had the picture of the coon dog that you sent to me in the mail today?
No, this is a different guy, but they have similar inclination. Well, his little thing is he likes good-looking blondes. And he saw this good-looking blonde in Expo, and it happens to be Joel's sister, Ruth. And so he got her contact information and started communicating with her through email and hooked me into it, and I got hooked in with his mother, Joel's mother. So for over 10 years, his mother and I developed this wonderful relationship. His dad's a retired pastor from up in Michigan, and I didn't even meet the kids until I moved down here, and Ruth, who works for one of the major airlines, flew down here just to visit and look around. And then I consequently got much more involved with Joel and his situation. And Joel's my kind of guy, man, because his main kind of work is he goes up to Alaska, where I used to live when I was a kid, and is a big game guide up there in the hunting season. And then what really spurned all this, and this is one of the things that was very interesting to me and one of the reasons I requested that we get Joel on today, is because people in the country will remember maybe 6, 8, 7 years ago, Joel can be more specific on this, when Montana was the first state to pass an intrastate gun law excluding the feds. Okay, remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Well, that was Mr. Joel, was the spark plug of that, and I have a feeling all that is tied into what we're going to talk about today, and I thought that all of these events, especially accumulating today with this massive exposure on how deep the spying eye, the all-seeing eye goes, which incidentally I think is probably the reason for all those indices being down simultaneously. All that coupled today, it just seems like a good day, and so I guess we got Joel on the line, and that's the background, and he's a heck of an all-American, like a ruggedly independent Western kind of guy, and I wanted to put some light on his story because they're trying to jack around with my man up there.
Well, it says that in the article I'm reading, well, let's bring Joel on right now. Hello, Joel. How are you doing?
Hi, man. It's good to be with you today. I had been admiring you guys from a distance, and I'm very happy to be able to talk with you.
Well, I see that you were charged with obstructing a peace officer, resisting arrest, and fleeing from or eluding a police officer. You pled guilty to that, and the circumstances were that there was a brush fire that was threatening your home, if I understand correctly, and you were traveling down a private road trying to get to the home in order to protect it and or your family, and police officers attempted to stop you from reaching your home. Is that roughly correct?
Well, I did not plead guilty. I was.
Did I say guilty? I meant to say pled not guilty. That's what it says. Excuse me.
A plea of not guilty was entered for me. But yes, I live out in a flat area in the valley here along the Yellowstone River, and it's surrounded by grass. And there was a grass fire, and I tried to go home when I found out from a friend who called me that the area was on fire. I live at the end of a 3.5-mile private road, and I made it about halfway when I was blockaded, and a deputy and a highway patrol stopped me and pointed their guns at me and threw me to the ground and hauled me off to jail.
All right. Now, this is this is more complex in that we have a cop here who's trying to prevent anybody from coming close to the fire. I assume that's just what he's trying to do. And in the articles I've read, there are allegations that the cop saw something like a holster on your front seat, and he did let you recover a firearm from it and the pistol, and he was, and this was part of the basis for him saying, got to watch out for this guy, meaning you. Now, is that true, false, incomplete?
Well, the deputy in his narration alleged that my hand went towards something on my belt that looked like it might be a gun, and I was wearing a gun at the time, and it was on my left side. But the interesting thing is that belies the whole story was that the video clearly shows that I did nothing of the sort, because it was all videoed on the Highway Patrol dash cam. And although not only did I, you know, go anywhere near the gun with my hand, when they threw me to the ground and rolled me over with my firearm, and they put the handcuffs on me, and they took some things from my belt, because I always have tools with me of various kinds, and they went through my pockets, and they stood me back up, and I was standing there in the middle of the road, handcuffed, and then they noticed a firearm, and then they came and took it. So the idea that they even suspected I had a firearm is completely bogus, because they didn't even find it until after they started to take me to the car.
Well, it's not unusual for police to trump up charges. They can stop you for driving, for weaving across the white line, and next thing you know, they're going to allege the taillight was out, you didn't have your seatbelt fastened, there's no insurance, and you're shooting out the window. Now I'm exaggerating to make a point, but it's not unusual. Again, you were arrested for obstructing a peace officer, resisting arrest, and fleeing from or eluding a police officer. Now, is this just, is there a reason and rationale on the police side of this, or is this absolutely or primarily an exaggeration?
Well, there is some rationale. In Montana, we have a law that says that the fire chief in the local jurisdiction can exclude people from the scene of a fire or cause them to be removed. And I believe that this is entirely unconstitutional, and they claimed that the fire chief gave the order to keep people from the fire, even though my neighbors were not evacuated and most of them never left. And this came out afterwards, but when I went to the county attorney and asked her by what basis was I kept from my property, she didn't know.
Uh-huh. And so what was the real, you know, we see situations where the police officers become extraordinarily aggressive when people merely challenge their authority. We have reached a point where the police across the country seem to think that we are obligated to do whatever they say whenever they say it, and there is no wiggle room on this. And if you happen to be willful, if you demonstrate that you are guilty of willful uppityness, in other words, you're just not going along with the program, say, listen, I got an important thing here. The house might be burning. Nevertheless,
the issue becomes...
Do you or will you not conform to the police officer's orders?
In my opinion, it's all about controlling and supervising people rather than protecting. Yeah. It came out in the trial that deputy was out there to protect law enforcement, not protect property. And he's the kind of guy who claims he was in the military and used to take down people often out there in the sandy place. And he figured that'd be a good thing to do to me, because I was not submitting to somebody's authority.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he says that I told you to get on the ground, and you didn't do it, and so you were resisting, and which is ludicrous, because resisting has the element of using physical force to harm an officer. And he expects that any time he yells at somebody, they should comply immediately. And I have the attitude that if I'm standing on the ground, I am on the ground, and get on the ground doesn't mean anything to me.
Yeah, I guess if you're up in a tree, I can understand if you're up in a tree or you're up on top of the roof of your car, your truck. He said, get down on the ground. I don't know. I can understand a certain, but there is, the problem is, We have a police mentality that seems to be pervasive where they just expect your automatic obedience.
You know,
there is no reason. You don't get to have a reason. You obey.
The mentality, Al, is the beatings will continue until morale improves.
Well, what do you mean by morale?
Well, I mean, that's just a general statement until you'll comply.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. And I understand. They're going to deliver an attitude adjustment, and we are at a point. What do you think? You've been a representative at the state level, if I understand correctly, a Republican representative in the Montana state legislature. Is that true?
Yes.
So you have some background in legislation. What, if anything, do you think should be done to mitigate these kinds of problems with police? I mean, they have to be a little more reasonable one way or another.
Yeah, it's a cultural problem, in my opinion. We've had a cultural shift where the police, instead of being trained to serve and protect, they now supervise and control, mm-hmm. and they're taught to make people submit. And we have a culture where they have now become law enforcement officers rather than peace officers who keep the peace and intervene when there has been a breach of the peace. They now intervene when there is no breach of the peace, and they expect people to submit, to grovel, to lick their boots, even when there is no need, and they, in their zeal, have become our controllers rather than our protectors.
I understand. You went to trial on this issue. You went to court, and one of the things that apparently happened, from what I've read, is that during the voir dire portion of the trial, when they are selecting the jury, that potential members of the jury who were perhaps sympathetic to your perspective were excluded from the jury. Can you explain that a little further, and can you tell us how many jurors we are talking about?
Well, it was a rather a long process. There was more than 30 potential jurors. But the prosecutor asked certain questions of people, and some of them unwisely told the prosecutor straight up that they believed that I was right and they wouldn't convict me, and they would have done the same thing, and they were thereupon promptly excused. I could have wished that they would have heard the evidence and maybe been part of the jury. But as it turned out, I was voted guilty by 5 women and 2 men, one of the men being a close personal friend of the prosecutor, so I didn't have much of a chance.
You didn't have a 12-man jury. You had 7 jurors, is that right?
6 with an alternate, yes.
I see, 6 with an alternate, all right. And you didn't have 12. Okay, it took place down at the Justice of the Peace level, and I think what we're going to do is break right now. We will take some commercial announcements. And when we return, we'll get deeper into Mr. Boniak's story. And I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing your name correctly. You can correct me right now if you like.
I just say Boniak.
Boniak. Okay, Boniak. All right, we will be back with Joel Boniak and Roger S. Sales in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family. American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. I'm here with Joel Bonnick. He's telling us his story of confrontation with the police and local authorities up in Livingston, Montana, or thereabouts. And Roger S. Sales, our foreign correspondent from Argentina, will be back to talk more with Joel and Roger in just a moment. But first, here's a special program brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, course 1-800-375-4188. Today's special from Discount Gold and Silver is four $5 Liberties. These are gold coins, a shade under a quarter of an ounce, four of them. They're almost uncirculated, AU quality, and you'll get four $5 Liberties. 1 year subscription to the International Forecaster. That's either a renewal or a new subscription. Shipping included for $2,000. These classic coins trade for relatively small premiums over their gold value, making them an outstanding buy. The International Forecaster reports on global information on business, finance, economics, social, and political issues. Regular price is $2,150. Today's savings, $150. Special, $2,000. Four $5 Liberties, the International Forecaster, shipping included, $2,000. Give Melody and Carla a call at 1-800-375-4188. And we'll get back now to Mr. Bonnick and his story from Montana. And it illustrates a fundamental problem that seems to be growing in this country, and it is an attitude within the police that we must instantly obey. And no matter what's going on, there is no reason for you not to instantly obey whatever a police officer tells you to do. And in Mr. Bonnick's story is that a fire is threatening his home. He's driving down a private road trying to get to that fire, and he is impeded, stopped by the police, ultimately arrested, ultimately taken to court, and ultimately found guilty on this situation. And there is at least... How do we get around this, Mr. Bonnick?
I have a question. I had an interjection, kind of a question that was curiosity a bit. Is, you know, we keep emphasizing it was on a private road.
Yep.
And how much does his jurisdiction edge over? You're talking about, I guess, Joel, the police powers is what they're falling back on here. The police powers being exercised in a fire in this example, correct?
Well, there is a statute in Montana that gives the fire chief the authority to keep people from the fire scene or have them removed, and he can delegate that authority. But the bigger question is not so much the police and the fire chief, but my biggest concern is why do we live in a culture, and what bothers me is that so few men out there are brave enough to stand up for natural, unalienable rights and say, no, we're not going to allow this, but we are going to do what God has given the duty and the authority to protect our own homes.
Well, you know, you're talking about a battle Al and I've been deeply involved in for, Al, 30 years and myself 20, so we're not new to this scene here.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And I understand. But it takes what he's doing is people standing up, and the problem with it is you've got to have the basis to stand up. It's just like the quote, you know, the site, the learned hand site that I like to use so much is to claim one's rights, one has to be a belligerent claimant, and you can't be belligerent unless you absolutely cold know them.
No, you're right.
For me, I'm standing up for this, not because I couldn't have gotten out with some kind of a deal with a prosecutor ahead of time, but because if I don't stand up, it's going to happen again, and it will again, and other people do it, and not as a stand up.
If you had it to do over again, what, if anything, would you do differently?
I would have had more people helping me, and I would have I would not have gone in alone. I would not have tried to drive in because I was overwhelmed and outmanned and out-vehicled. I would have sought some help from some men around and say, no, you need to let us in there because it's the right thing to do.
Would have been hard to do, though, under the circumstances. I can see you mean you'd like to have had another couple of vehicles besides your own traveling down your road, trying to get to your house, in part because you have a volunteer fire department in your part of the country. And why couldn't you volunteer to help prevent the fire or suppress the fire that was attacking your own house? Why couldn't other people volunteer to help you protect your house? I think
that's fair.
Part of it.
That's fairly commonly done in Montana, and I just went through a four-hour presentation here a couple of weeks ago where the state sent a man down to talk to the landowners about cooperation on the scenes of fires. When it got finished, I asked him, why are you telling us this? This doesn't happen in Park County because the police won't let us get to our own property. And he said, well, that's part of the reason that I'm here. So somebody from the state, you know, sent him down here, and I'm not quite sure why, but the bigger picture is here, is that there were other people standing by with trucks and horse trailers who were willing and able to come in and to help people to rescue their animals should they be needed, and the police would not let them cooperate with them. And some of the firefighters who saw my arrest and takedown and being hauled to jail, they were angry that I was not allowed to come and volunteer alongside them to control the fire. After all, it was just a grass fire, and it was someplace that burned out by itself because the grass was so thin. And the point is that the police were not protecting. They were out there controlling, and it was more important for them to exert their authority than it was to protect the people's unalienable rights.
Observation, Joel.
If I'm understanding the story, the part of the story you just told us, you listened to someone coming from the state close by, I don't know if this was in your county, but close by, in addressing the issue of whether or not the police had to be more reasonable. And did I misunderstand this or not?
They didn't address the role of the police. They addressed the role of landowner and fire crew cooperation.
And okay.
Apparently it happens pretty normally in Montana, where especially out in the eastern part of the state where there's huge ranch lands, where the local landowners will show up with large equipment and tanker trucks. One instance, they showed up with 50,000 gallons of water in semi-trucks to help fight the fire. And so the state is, you know, very much helpful of being dependent upon these resources, and cooperation should be there, and they recognize that it's good and useful, but in my case, wouldn't happen.
Do you think your case and the fight you made, the public fight you made in court and so on, Do you think that helped to motivate this official from the state to come down and at least in an adjacent area say, hey, we need to cooperate? Or do you think he was just, it's just coincidental that they were talking about this problem subsequent to your own situation?
It's hard for me to gauge that, but when I asked him why he's telling us that and it doesn't happen in our county, he said, well, that's part of the reason that I'm here.
Okay.
Let me ask you, is the danger for fires more at this time of year, Joel, or in the fall? And what was the date on the original incident?
The incident was the latter part of July, and the fire danger is worst here in July and August because we get very little rain. It's a very arid part of the country, and everything is dry in those months.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I would suspicion.
All right, we've got a caller, Jim from West Virginia, is on the line. Let's see what Jim wants to ask or contribute. Jim, are you there?
Oh, I have very little to contribute, but I have a big question to ask. I consider Alfred and Roger to be brilliant legal minds. And, okay, I almost guarantee you that the government agencies which are coming after you, as well as the court, are private corporations listed on Dun & Bradstreet. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't this be called racketeering? And I better back out of this so I can listen on the radio rather than gobbling up any more time. But can you gentlemen take that for a round? Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. I'm sure we can. And I don't think this question is a surprise to Mr. Bonick. Do you follow what Jim was talking about?
I can tell you that my local county government and court is listed on Dun & Bradstreet, and I have documents to prove it.
Yeah, yeah. And when you tried to bring up evidence along those lines and raise questions about whether or not the judge and or prosecutor had bonds and whether or not you had unalienable rights, it's my understanding that the prosecutor made a motion to the court to limit the kind of information that you could present to the jury. Is that true?
That is true, but it even goes beyond that because I have made the issue of oaths and bonds a public issue with the county commissioners, and they have been backpedaling and obfuscating at every turn. We have a law in Montana that the bonds of all public officials must be reviewed by the county commissioners twice a year. And when I went to the county commissioners and asked them about it, one of the county commissioners, on and for the record, with a tape running, said, that hasn't been done in the 10 years I've been here.
What do you make of that?
What I make of that is that these people think they are above the law, and they hope that nobody else will notice. And when someone like Joel Bonick comes along and points out that the king has no clothes, they don't like it, and so they put me on a Soviet-style show trial. And this has gone all the way up to the governor's office. The matter of oaths and bonds is how one of the ways that we make sure that the government does not go out of its boundaries, and this is something that they don't want to talk about because it's an issue from the governor all the way down to the dog catcher in Montana.
Why do you think they don't want to talk about this?
Well,
how hard can it be to get a bond? How expensive is it?
Well, many of the public officials in Montana, their oaths are not valid. I know that, and also from the governor on down, they know that. So there's a constitutional crisis going on there. Mm-hmm. But I don't expect that the Supreme Court's going to be on my side and say that we have to start all over because it's too big of an issue. But beyond that, the whole issue of bonds is a crucial one because the government officials putting up a bond was one of the safeguards for the people that they could go against if the people in government did not perform their jobs properly or faithfully. And because those bonds are defective, in my opinion, and some of them are flat out not even filed, they've got to keep this under wraps because the biggest question we have as citizens or people is, what do we do when the government does not behave properly? What is our recourse? That's always been the biggest question. And it used to be grand juries, but now grand juries are out the window. And so the next fallback would be the bond of the public official. But if they don't have a bond that you can move against to get redress of your grievances, what does that leave you with?
It leaves you with another question.
Tyranny.
It leaves you with another question. If this is a widespread situation, and it may be, that almost no one is carrying a legitimate oath and or bond. We're probably not, if we're only talking about 1% of the people in government didn't have proper bond, the solution to the problem is slap them down hard. If we're talking about 80% of the people or more in government don't have a proper bond, then we have something systemic happening. And the question is this a violation of the law by employees and officers of the government, or is this evidence that the people you're dealing with, the reason they don't have the bonds, they don't have the proper oaths, is because they are not truly the de jure government. They are some sort of private entity of the sort that Jim was talking about when he called in a couple of moments ago. Do you follow what I'm saying?
I'll tell you what else it's evidence to me, Al, of is that the change probably happened in or after the 30s, and it's evidence of this new, experimental jurisprudence out of that government speech, and the fact that what they've done is brought this feudal system in, and everybody was declared property, all right? And unless you, and that's the whole thing, everything that's running against Joel, everything that's running against people that are hearing this right now, is running on one simple legal doctrine, and that is presumption. And it's presumed that you're in that group that's regulated. They don't have a need for bonded officials because they really don't have anybody hardly to look over. Most of the
and
people
top
are
of
these
it,
property
if,
things.
If they're not the de jure government, if they are simply some private entity that's masquerading as if it were the government, then they aren't going to be obligated to obey the Constitution.
Well, they're not. Their obligation is to write and enforce public policy, not law. They just call it law. It's public policy for all these people that are property.
So what do you think, Joel? Do you think you are confronting the de jure government, or do you think you are confronting some sort of a privatized private entity that walks like government, talks like government, but in fact it's some sort of a privatized corporate entity? Do you have an opinion on that, or is that something you're not aware of?
I'm pretty convinced it's the latter. I made the point in one of my hearings to ask the judge specifically what kind of court I was in. Was it de facto? Was it corporate? Was it admiralty? And she got red-faced, and she said, well, she stammered and stuttered and said, well, you've been a legislator. You should know that. It's done by the Constitution, isn't it?
Isn't it? I mean, the fact that she can't answer that question, I guarantee you, if I was a judge sitting in a court and you asked me what kind of a court this was, I wouldn't be as able to tell you as if you ask me what kind of a car I'm driving at 80 miles an hour down the highway.
Al, let me tell you a funny story.
Chrysler, a Ford, or Toyota. I know.
I have a friend in North Georgia up there many years who's very litigious, and we were talking just the other day, and we were talking about some of his exploits in the past, and his family, you'll appreciate this because it was family court stuff, and he's in front of the judge with this vindictive ex-wife trying to battle over the kids, and he's claiming all this stuff, and the judge says, well, Mr. Blank, you do live in the state of Georgia, don't you? And he replied, Your Honor, how do you live inside a corporation? And it absolutely stopped her cold.
Yeah, the way I see it, guys, is that we have elements of the old de jure system there that they keep trotting out to make us think that it's legitimate, but it's all a pretense, and so very few people know about it that you're considered fringe if you challenge the legitimacy of it. And that's the system we have in every state of the union.
That's exactly correct. What they've got is...
Hang on for a second, Roger. We'll talk about fringe when we return. We're going to take a break for some more commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Roger Sales and Joel Bonnick. Be right back. Please stay tuned.
have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from ABR. The ABR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. Don't forget today's special, $5 Liberties. That would be, they're just a shade under a quarter of an ounce of gold in each one of the coins. They are AU almost uncirculated AU grade, a year's subscription to the International Forecaster, shipping included $2,000. It's $150 savings. Give Carla a call at 1-800-375-4188, Discount Gold and Silver. Take advantage of that special. We are talking to Mr. Joel Bonnick and Roger Sales, and we are discussing Mr. Bonnick's confrontation with the duly constituted authorities. And one of the things I'm curious about, when it some of the ideas that you tried to advance at the court, and that the government tried to prevent you from talking about, and they were written off in at least one newspaper as conspiracy theories. Did you have any success at getting some of those ideas in front of a jury, or were they completely excluded?
They were completely excluded. I was not allowed to make any references to God, the Constitution, oaths, bonds, any other statutes, newspaper articles, people who might be members of the Oath Keepers or believe in constitutional or Tea Party, they were excluded from the jury pool. 15 points that were moved and the judge approved that I couldn't bring up at trial.
Boy, these people are scared, aren't they?
Well, you know,
it's the trial.
Yeah, and on top of which, let's suppose that your 15 points are absurd and ridiculous, because that's what the government wants people to believe. They are fringe ideas, and they're just, okay, why not give you enough rope and just let you hang yourself? We could even let you wear a tinfoil hat into court. Why not do it? Because they're afraid the ideas will gain traction. They're afraid that the ideas will be perceived to be true. And they don't have a real defense against those ideas. That's right. The reason. I mean, if a guy wants to make a fool of himself, it's all right with me. I don't care. Unless he's making statements that I can't defeat or refute, and then it makes a fool out of me. And I'm sure you understand what I'm saying It becomes evidence that the ideas you were trying to communicate were valid. While the jury pool was restricted to prevent people from who were sympathetic to your situation from being on the jury, I noticed that the newspaper articles that came in about the trial, there was one, the Huffington Post didn't seem particularly unfair to me. I didn't read the whole thing, but there was another one from, Cowgirl, that was it, Cowgirl Blog, Montana's number one political website. And they were critical of you. And they made a point of being your association with the Tea Party, for example. And I'm curious if you saw a serious discrepancy between the news media, which was perhaps allowed to disparage you, and your case where you were prevented from saying anything that might implicitly disparage the government. You follow what I'm saying?
Yes. The news media had numerous and obvious lies and discrepancies and omissions from what really happened. I've had several appearances in the court, and so some of these are probably running together. But I don't read the Montana Cowgirl. I don't read the Huffington Post. And I've gotten used to being maligned in the press when I was a legislator, because whenever you come up with a good idea, if they don't like it, they have bad things to say about you. But my viewpoint is if you're not getting maligned by those kinds of outlets, you're probably not doing your job, because they really squawk and squeal the most when you do the right thing. And so for me, when the Montana Cowgirl, which I've never looked at, and I don't know what it says, but I know that it's not very favorable, to me it's like pigs squealing and sheep bleeding. That's just what they do, and they're always going to do it, and it doesn't make any difference to me.
Well, it doesn't. It's one of the things. I've seen the battle with other people. I mean, I know a man named Robert Fox, and he's been arrested, spent a year in the slammer, and the local newspaper did its level best to repeatedly condemn Fox in a way that was likely to prejudice the jury. And it was a situation where Fox really didn't have anything, but it was just a terrible mix-up, a terrible problem. Cops wouldn't back off. Fox tried to fight the situation because he wasn't innocent. He wasn't guilty of anything. And I don't know. It was... The media played a role, and I'm curious. There's the Livingston Enterprise is one of the local newspapers that apparently reported on your case, and I'm curious if you have an opinion on them.
Some of it was not unfavorable, but they always leave out some things, and they don't always tell the whole story, and so if you only get your information from the newspaper, it's going to be a problem. You won't always have the right story. But the more importantly to me is some people have said, you know, Joel, what you're doing is fighting a fight that you cannot win, and you should save your ammunition, you should save your strength and your resources for the big battles. But I'm not sure about that, whether I'm doing the right thing or not. But I wonder if we only sit on our hands until there's a big, big battle, and if the big crunch finally comes, will we have any strength, energy, resolve, or courage built up? Or should we be standing up for liberty all the time, wherever, for the sake of ourselves and the people who still believe in liberty?
Yeah, constant vigilance, without a doubt, Joel. Let me ask you a question, if I could. If they convict you, if you got convicted of this, would it jeopardize your guide business?
Well, I've already been convicted at the lower court level, and it certainly will come up in the next time I reapply for the old licenses.
Are you convicted of a misdemeanor or a felony?
Misdemeanors.
Mm-hmm. I didn't think it was that serious. I didn't think it was all that serious. Just out of curiosity, you're in the guide business. Do you happen to know a man named Red Eiler?
I don't.
Okay. He's... Brother, I know him from here in Oregon, and he also works as a guide in Alaska, and he's probably up there right now. He comes down in the wintertime, and stays here until late spring, early summer, but then he's up there now, and I'm just curious whether, in any case, where are we going with this? What do you think can be done, and what are you trying to do to change the situation, make people more aware, organized, to change the law? What are you trying to do?
Well, that's a good question, and it all really has to come back to the big picture. And the big picture is, as I see it, that we live in a society where freedom is mostly gone and most people do not value it anymore, but there are some of us who still value it and still are fighting for it and still intend to not give up the birthright that we have been given without some resistance. And I am standing for those people. They call me, email, or write to me, and they send money to help with the defense. I'm standing for them, I'm taking the heat, and I'm a spokesman and out in front taking the slings and arrows for the sake of those people who believe in freedom and are standing for it, and also for the sake of their children who don't want to see their parents give up without a fight.
I understand.
Joel, you're my kind of guy, buddy. Why don't you give the audience your contact information where anybody out there might could get a hold of you if they want to help or if they've got suggestions or just want to give you an attaboy or whatever?
Well, the easiest way to do that would be with an email, and my political email is j.rhino. It's j.rhino. That's a big one-horned African mammal, and at hotmail.com.
So that's j.rhino@hotmail.com, right?
Yeah, that's right. And if they just drop me an email, and they can say yes, no, maybe, way to go, or whatever they want to do.
Fantastic.
Agree or disagree.
Are you aware of any other individuals in Montana or even across the country that are engaged in similar conflicts?
Well, as a matter of fact, I have some newspapers in my file of other men have done this in more dramatic ways than I have, where they've actually been driving their bulldozers with a gun in their hand to protect themselves from the deputies, saving their ranches from fires. And so, you know, this is a good old Montana tradition. And the guy that came from the state and said that, there should be landowner cooperation, he said he's had guys that have stood in their driveways with a shotgun across the hood of a truck and says, you're not coming in here and burning me out. And, so this is not unprecedented. The problem is, though, when somebody stands up, what should happen never happens. Is that all the ranchers should get together and say, get out of our way, we're going in there to help.
The collective there is very powerful because that's the power of the people.
Yes, it is.
So, are you working to generate an organization, a second volunteer fire organization, fire department that would? We're coming in. We're going to save the property, regardless of what you say. Is a second fire department? Volunteer fire department an option? Is it unreasonable?
The fire department is volunteers, and they're good guys, and they're generally favorable. The problem is that there's a fire chief that is very dictatorial, and he needs to go. And the policemen, whenever there's a fire in my county, they all show up, and they all get around because they all want something to do. And, they're too heavy-handed. But the fire department has my thanks and honor, because they're volunteers just like everybody else. They do it because they serve the community and they want to do the right thing for their neighbors. And I've been invited to join them, but I said, there's no way I could do it with that guy being the fire chief.
One of the questions that was proposed, I think by your wife, may have drafted the one document that I received by email. And she proposed people ask themselves a couple of questions. One of them was, what moral, ethical, or philosophical system justifies using violence or the threat of violence against a man who has not harmed anyone? And in your case, police officer apparently admitted under oath in the context of the trial that he would have shot and killed you if you had tried to drive past him.
He did. He said that under oath. And the amazing thing is, more than that, he said that, is that all the good men of the county in which I live have not risen up in anger and gone to the sheriff and said, that man will not be a deputy in our county one more day.
Amen. So, amen, Joel.
That's what needs to be done.
We have too many timid people, even here in Montana, which is supposed to be a bastion of conservatism. It's not. all these people are going about their business, and they're complacent, they're timid, they're scared, they're busy, and they don't stand for their liberties. And when it comes to a crisis, men like Joel Bonnick are left standing there by himself.
Unfortunately, they're intimidated and they're conditioned, and that's my view of
pretty
much
the whole country. They're also confused. They're poorly educated.
Yeah. Well, that's part of the conditioning, is the rats in the maze type scenario.
Yeah, but they don't understand what battle is being waged here.
Absolutely.
They don't understand that this relates to liberty. They don't understand. They just see this in terms of cop versus, cop just following orders versus some guy who's trying to get to his house. They don't see the larger issues, and that goes to a need to educate people and make them understand and respect and value the concept of God-given unalienable rights. And right now, the whole idea, you say that, and it's like you're speaking in tongues. Yeah. Have you seen a difference? Have you seen a difference in the people in your community since this conflict took place? Do you see any evidence that people are paying a little more attention to these concepts than they did before, or has it just kind of happened and disappeared and been forgotten?
Well, it is generating some public interest, but this is the reason that I have drafted that document that I sent you, the why it matters to you and why you should care. My idea is that I want to reach out to people who would do the right thing if they were instructed and they knew and they were lifted out of their complacency and ignorance. And so I'm reaching out to them. And that's an opportunity to make it better.
I was going to say, if anybody in the audience wants to read that, and it's very well written, you can just shoot Joel an email at that j.rhino@hotmail.com. I'm sure he'd be glad to send it to you.
Okay. All right, we've got about 60 seconds left. Let's say 45 seconds left. Joel, is there something you'd like to add as a conclusion, a request for help, whatever?
Well, if anybody would like to offer some kind of help, moral support, or encouragement, they can certainly send me an email. But I want to thank you for this opportunity to talk about freedom and the nature of government. I've listened to you guys quite a bit, and I have you guys on my MP3 player, and I'm listening to you sometimes when I'm running around Alaska and chasing big fur critters.
Well, glad to hear it. We certainly appreciate it, and we hope we've been able to provide you a little help. We're certainly grateful to have you on the program today. We are grateful for your willingness to stand up, speak out, and fight these people. It's important that all people listening to this program, when you have the opportunity, try to do the same. You can make a difference. I'm Alfred Addisk on Financial Survival with Roger Sales and Joel Bonnick. We are out of time. I'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Joel, Roger, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.